on Annenberg Radio News.
And when we saw Coca-Cola in the store, it was like, oh my God, it's Coca-Cola.
We'll hear more from Vietnamese refugees about their first impressions of America. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, April 28th, 2011. I'm Megan Dickey. Hundreds of local and federal police officers teamed up for a gang bust that was more than 2 years in the making. They were targeting the Rancho San Pedro gang in Carson, which is estimated at 600 members. Late last night, officers launched Operation Pirate Town. They raided homes and arrested 80 members on drug, weapon, and immigration charges. Here's Councilwoman Janice Hahn.
1,300 of you descended on my community and rooted out the gang members that have intimidated, harassed, bullied, graffiti.
The LA County District Attorney will prosecute 145 people. The LAPD hopes the raids will seriously damage the Rancho San Pedro gang. It's been in operation since the 1970s. The royal wedding is just hours away. Stephanie Frischberg found out why Americans may be more excited than the Brits.
The flowers, the guest list, even the weather forecast in London. We know everything about the upcoming royal wedding between Prince William and Kate Middleton. That's thanks to the around-the-clock media coverage surrounding the big event. But is all the attention too much? British Consul General Dame Barbara Hayes says no.
Well, I'm sitting here in California and rather enjoying it, I must say. But I think what is absolutely astonishing is the interest.
You can even watch a live stream of the wedding on TV or the internet. The wedding is scheduled to start at 1 a.m. Pacific Coast time, and 2 billion people are expected to tune in. But USC professor Leo Brody says people aren't just interested in watching the royal romance unfold. He says people are just happy to hear some good news these days.
Well, I think it's a great relief for people to be able to focus on something that's not a war or not the economy or, you know, not something that's disruptive to their lives.
Thousands of articles have been written about every step of the couple's relationship. But a Nielsen study found that America is covering the royal wedding even more than the Brits. Leo Brody thinks he knows why.
Americans have always been much more fascinated with the British royal family than the Brits have been themselves. In fact, you're a little bored with hearing about them all the time.
With an estimated 250,000 Brits living in Los Angeles, the city is ready for William and Kate's big day. Stephanie Frischberg, Annenberg Radio News.
On May 17th, Los Angeles will hold a special election. Voters in the 36th Congressional District will replace Jan Harman in the House. And city voters will choose two open seats on District 5's Board of Education and Board of Trustees. Dave Duhlberg has more on how the city is preparing.
In any form of democracy, voting in elections is paramount. That's the message Los Angeles' City Clerk June Lagmay had today at a media event promoting next month's runoff election for two municipal seats in District Number 5.
The right to vote is precious. We see that more and more as we watch CNN and those countries that don't have the ability to vote.
While she admits positions on boards of education and trustees lacks the notoriety of a mayor or council member, their role is no less important.
The school board and the community college district are those municipal entities that set policy for our kids and for our young people as they pursue their careers, and it isn't any less valid than voting for mayor, city council, city attorney, whatever.
As has been the case since 2007, there will be three different voting options depending on voter preference. They are the scan-based Inca vote, which prevents invalid or blank ballots, the audio ballot booth, geared towards the visually impaired and those who are not primary English speakers, and the vote-by-mail option, which will require voters to turn their ballots back in by May 10th. Lagmay says the vote-by-mail option is becoming more and more popular despite recent technology.
What we are noticing, though, is more of a trend for vote-by-mail, and even more impressively, the folks that wish to be permanent vote-by-mail, voters. So they sign up once and automatically they get a vote every time.
Currently, the city's election division has 6,200 people signed up to volunteer at precincts for the May 17th election. If you are interested in volunteering, go to cityclerk.lacity.org. Dave Dolberg, Annenberg Radio News.
The annual Festival of Books hosted by the Los Angeles Times arrived in South LA this weekend for the first time. Jamie Lee Curtis and Dave Eggers are a few of the hundreds of authors who will be speaking at the event. But as Emily Frost reports, residents have mixed opinions about how it will affect the community.
For 10 years, the Festival of Books was held on UCLA's campus in Westwood. Moving it to USC brings it closer to the city center and gives thousands of people a fresh look at South Los Angeles. Beverly Kenworthy of the LA Chamber of Commerce says attendees will be surprised by how much the area has changed.
The improvements and the all the new construction and the new buildings, the new offerings for food and everything has been tremendous. It's going to be positive not just for the businesses but for USC as well.
But some residents don't think it will mean much for the local community. Clemente Franco of the South Central Neighborhood Council thinks lower-income and Latino families of the area are being excluded from the event.
I think USC and the LA Times have done a poor job of making it accessible to get those folks involved. And I don't think USC is very inviting, although I think they give the appearance that they are, and I just don't think they are.
USC's president, Max Nikias, expects a crowd of 150,000 to attend. Emily Frost, Annenberg Radio News.
Clear skies this evening with lows in the mid to upper 50s. Tomorrow, low clouds and fog in the morning, but the sun will come out with highs in the 60s to lower 70s. And the sun will stick around through Saturday with highs from the upper 60s to mid 70s. Later on Annenberg Radio News, I talk with a civil rights, race, and legal history scholar about the release of President Obama's long-awaited full-length birth certificate. Tomorrow marks the 19th anniversary of the 1992 riots. South Los Angeles erupted after the acquittal of white officers on trial for beating black motorist Rodney King. For the next 3 days, the city was caught up in fear, violence, and devastation. Dwayne Earl and his brother are the owners of Earl's Grill in South LA. The brothers started with a hot dog stand and were getting ready to open their first brick-and-mortar restaurant when the riots hit.
People don't understand what a sacrifice is. And every day for 2.5 years, my brother put that restaurant together. When we were halfway done, the riots had hit in 92. Once the riots hit, we watched them loop down the block. The fire started coming towards us. In fact, the fire hit our building. We were in the building with firefighters. That's the wildest thing. I remember being across the street with my brother. We're both on the phone calling my mom and my grandmother in New York, and we're both crying, telling them that the city is blazing. We're watching our hard-earned thing just go up in smoke, and we're watching our own people burn it down. Burn the son of a gun down so they can collect insurance, but not realize they were gonna shit everybody else up in the process. This is what we had to deal with. And then when they finally save it and the place was gutted, what insurance?
What did you do?
Start from scratch.
More than 50 people were killed in the violence and more than 2,500 injured. There was an estimated $1 billion in property damage. Sika owns the store in Leimert Park that sells jewelry and African clothing. He remembers the days he spent protecting his shop.
We moved beds. We had chairs and TVs and stereo sets. We moved right here into the middle of the street. And we slept here. We was here around the clock. But what is that, 4 or 5 days, 6 days? Every store owner was here. We took up the street. Wasn't anything to be afraid of. Nobody messed with us. I mean, you know, when we seen people starting to do certain things, we went and talked with them. And then when they did set a fire to the beauty salon over there, we moved everything out of the stores that we thought that maybe the fire would spread. So we took everything out those stores and put it into the center of the street. So we had to stand guard over it. You couldn't drive down the street. It almost got to be fun. I mean, we had brought about so much camaraderie in the neighborhood that when it was over with, it's kind of boring. You just got used to it. You know, it was a regular routine. It was like, I guess, doing the shooting a movie and you know, and then it's over with. And it's like, oh, what am I going to do now? It's time for vacation or something?
Sandy Beeman doesn't miss anything about that time. She was a young mother when the riots broke out.
I had just had a daughter that was 11 months old. I had to literally become a hostage of my own home and not come out for that entire week. I tried to go to the store at one point and was threatened by a couple of members of the community asking what color I was and what race I was and where did I live and how dare I come out during a time when they were taking over. And they meaning who? I don't know. I don't know who they was. And I held tight to my little one as I was standing there in the store just praying to God that nothing would happen to me as I left out of the store and got in my car. And these guys followed me to my car and told me that I just better understand what time it was and I needed to go home, get in the house. They were going to let me go this time, but if they saw me, they'd come back to kill me.
That was Sandy Beeman. You can listen to more memories and see photos of the Los Angeles riots on Intersection South LA at www.intersectionsouthla.org. 36 years ago, the first wave of Vietnamese refugees landed on American soil. They had left in a hurry. Most of them carried nothing but the clothes on their backs. Many of these refugees have built successful lives in their second homeland. Some continue to struggle. But as Christine Trang reports, the memories of a lost country still remain a part of everyday life.
The Vietnam War sparked controversy in America. For years following the war, the specter of Vietnam influenced American public policy and opinion. But after almost 40 years and several long wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, the Vietnam War is fading from the American consciousness. However, for people who lived through and experienced the war in Vietnam, this anniversary is a time to remember what they have lost and gained. But for those who fled Vietnam, the memories still haunt them. Alan Vo, Yao Ding, and Susan Nguyen are three Vietnamese Americans old enough to remember their first impressions of the United States.
I love America even when I was young, way before in 1975.
But the three Vietnamese refugees didn't know they'd soon be learning about America firsthand. As North Vietnam invaded South Vietnam on April 30th, 1975, everything changed. More than 500,000 South Vietnamese refugees fled in boats and headed toward the South China Sea. Women and children faced rape and violence. Others were robbed of their possessions. Food went quickly, so quickly, Alan says, that a few crew and passengers were forced to eat human flesh out of necessity.
The first person that just died fresh, you would drink their blood from their head.
Yao's parents lost everything. Communists took their belongings, their money, their business. That's when they decided to leave the country by boat.
When they come over here, we have nothing.
For many Vietnamese refugees, their first view of America was at a refugee camp. All around, people sobbed over a lost country. Susan stayed in a camp too, but she considers her first real day in America when she drove from her refugee camp in Pennsylvania to the home of her sponsors, a minister's family in Bridgewater, New Jersey.
The scenery was beautiful, the street was clean. I ate a typical American dinner that night. Steak, salad, mashed potatoes, and apple pie for dessert. So I thought to myself, oh my God, we want rice, we don't want meat. Too much meat. But finally, she took me to the supermarket. So I asked her to bought a big bag of rice. And I asked her, can I cook the rice? She was shocked that I cooked like the whole big pot. She said, can you guys finish this in a month or something? I said, no, we will finish it in 2 days. And we sure did.
Yao distinctly remembers his first taste of Coca-Cola. In Vietnam, his relatives never let him drink it. He could only look.
And when we saw Coca-Cola in the store, it was like, oh my God, it's Coca-Cola. And it's not just the little bottle. This is Texas. So it's like this big bottle. Like, we're like, oh my God, look how big this Coke is.
Over the decades, Yao, Alan, and Susan made a life for themselves. For years, Yao's family has owned a restaurant in Westminster, the Orange County city known as Little Saigon. He'll never forget the tough times his family experienced in America, but he says there's one good thing about their journey here.
It got my family together more. I mean, before, when we had money, my parents never really eat together. We never eat together. We always eat separately, you know, separate time. And I wish, not I don't wish we were poor, but it just it seemed like my family worked better when we were, you know, struggling.
Alan owns an auto insurance company in Westminster. He says it's most important to be thankful for his parents.
Every parent that comes to America pretty much sacrifice themselves, and they work their fingers to the bones for their kids.
Susan visits Westminster often. She was worried when she first reached America. But now she speaks for many Vietnamese Americans when she says things are different.
We went through a lot of hardship and hard times. But I think back, we're very happy. Things turned out even much more than I expected. Our kids have grown and have a great future ahead. This is a land of opportunity. No doubt, this is heaven on earth.
Christine Trang, Annenberg Radio News.
Now that President Obama has released his birth certificate, USC professor Ariella Gross is hoping it will put an end to the so-called birther movement. Gross, a civil rights activist and legal history scholar, says the controversy is an example of today's racialized politics.
I hope this settles for once and for all this ridiculous accusation that he was not born in the country and that he's somehow less American than any other president we've ever had. And this should certainly set it to rest. He released the long form of his birth certificate. I hope that that's the end of the whole birther phenomenon.
Yeah, and so what does this say about politics?
Well, I think to me it shows some of the racialized undercurrents of our politics today. I don't think we would be seeing these accusations about President Obama if his father had come from Europe rather than Africa. Mm-hmm. I think that there's become quite an ugly tone to the kind of politics we've seen around this kind of conspiracy theory movement. And I think the surprising amount of attention and credence that has been given to this movement is indicative of a troubling trend in our politics, which has become more trivial, more susceptible to kind of baseless rumors, and especially when race or citizenship are involved.
And so what do you feel about, like, the media coverage in regards to his birth certificate? Do you feel like it might be fueling more, like, concern or...
You know, there was an article in the New York Times this morning suggesting that the media coverage has inflamed what was not a major movement. But I have to say it seems to me that while, of course, the media has been reporting on it, there's been enough activity by people who should know better, like Donald Trump, someone who's considering running for president.
Yeah, yeah. What do you feel about Donald Trump's two cents in this whole fiasco?
Well, he certainly made a fool of himself, but I can't imagine that it's made anyone take him seriously as a presidential candidate.
In regard, that was USC professor Ariella Gross. By releasing his long form. Now, we check in with Candice Aviles to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Today, we spoke with students in Alabama and Tennessee about the tornado damage in the Midwest and South, and learn more about a very special festival that happened today in downtown L.A. for children. Stay tuned for these stories and more at 6 o'clock.
That's it for this Thursday and for this semester. Thanks to our Thursday staff, Smitha Bondade, Melissa Butler, Stephanie Frischberg, Laurel Galanter, Stephanie Guzman, Amanda Smith, Ashley Williams, and Carl Nikenig. Christine Trang is our producer. Jessica Flores is the executive producer. Billy Higgins is our technical guru and savior. We'll be off for the summer, but you can check out our stories on the website. We'll see you again in the fall. And for all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Megan Dickey.